You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me is John Bickard, Portfolio Manager, Value Fund at 91, speaking to us from his Manhattan base. John, welcome. We haven't spoken for a long time and there's a lot of water gone under the bridge. I just want to say that sometimes I find markets really, really intriguing and, dare I say, enjoyable. And I thought of you occasionally when I see markets selling off and then seeing all the value stocks getting even cheaper. And I can imagine you licking your lips and enjoying yourself.
So it's interesting on the whole value thing is there's only one market in the world where value is still underperforming, and that's the US market. So it's been an interesting split that in South Africa and other emerging markets and in Europe, value has actually been outperforming growth for a couple of years now. So like in South Africa, our domestic stocks have massively outperformed the market, and internationally they have as well. But in the biggest market, which is obviously very important, the US is 70% of the world market, the value is continuing to underperform massively because, you know, we had that correction in April in all the growth stocks in all the Magnificent Seven, and they've regained everything they lost. And so the market's rallied back to an all-time high. So, yeah, that's just an interesting split. I think it speaks to the power of the Magnificent Seven and the story and the bubble that is in US stocks. But the rest of the world, actually, value is doing very well.
Very good. Long may it continue. Before we talk about the fund and the strategy, you've had an opinion on an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. And here's the first paragraph. It says the following. A reckoning is coming for South Africa. The Trump administration sees it. So does Congress. But financial markets don't. And that's a problem. I tend to think you disagree.
So I did read the article with some interest, and the first thing I would just point out that if you look who wrote the article, it appeared in the Wall Street Journal, but it is, let's just say, a very right-wing commentator. And, you know, it's not the views of mainstream America. It's the views of some parts of America. So it shouldn't be taken as the views of everyone in America. That's very important. And if you look at the history of the author, they have a particular bias. Mm. So that's the first thing. I mean, there are some elements of truth in it, but I think the key thing for me is, you know, he concluded, you know, all this bad stuff is coming to South Africa because of their policies, political and economic, and, you know, the Wall Street doesn't see it. In other words, in this case, he's talking about the JSE doesn't see it, and I think that's where I'd really disagree, because if you look at the valuation of South African shares, they pretty much do agree that the day of reckoning is coming for South Africa, because the fact of the matter is, you know, the JSE has done pretty well recently, especially in the last year or two, but it's been driven all by gold stocks and platinum stocks and Naspers. Hmm. And the shares, the average South African share has had a nice rally on the election, but gave most of that back up in the first half of this year. And South African shares, that is shares that are based on South African earnings, pure South African incorporated shares, are basically trading as cheap as they've ever traded compared to emerging markets, as cheap as they've ever traded compared to world markets, and in absolute terms, pretty much as cheap as they've ever traded. So that's where I'd really disagree, is the day of reckoning is pretty much priced into South African shares. So it may or may not come, the day of reckoning. I personally don't think it will, but the shares think it is coming. So that's the kind of thing that where we make money for the Value Fund is we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but the shares are pretty much priced in the worst case for South Africa. And I think, just to take a step back, why are South African shares so cheap? I think a third of the reason is because of that article, and the market, South Africans and offshore, are worried about South Africa's political positioning and their antagonism with the United States. And it's called that the political worries are a third of the reason. And two thirds of the reason is the disappointing GDP growth the last year. And there I have to say, if you wind back a year ago, I would say, you know, if you said interest rates going to come down and everything that was going to happen in South Africa, I would have thought the economy would be growing at 2 or 3%. And it's growing at 1%. And I think two-thirds of the problem with South African shares is the disappointment in growth. And basically, a lot of South African shares have now priced in, you know, that South Africa will never really grow again. And I think the last point on this is, if I, the best example is something like Nedbank or Absa. You know, they trade on like 10% dividend yield for Nedbank, 8% for Absa. So let's call it 9. You know, the cost of 10-year money is 9.5% in South Africa. So you can buy a South African bond, which is a nominal yield in perpetuity at 9.5, or you can buy those two banks and get a 9% yield. And that suggests that the market does not expect the dividends of Absa and Nedbank to grow, even in nominal terms in the future, leave alone in real terms. So the lack of growth is now priced into South Africa.
Okay, so you disagree with the article and you must be licking your lips during that disagreement. Now then, let's talk about the value fund. Did it start 25 years ago or did you start with the fund 25 years ago?
So I started 25 years ago and the fund, I think, was run about, it started about 2 years before I took it over. But it was a 50 million rand fund that wasn't ready. It was, you know, we'd run it for 2 years, but it hadn't gained any traction yet.
Okay, certainly gained traction now because 25 years later, it's over 8 billion. We can maybe talk about some numbers later, but what I'm more interested in is the philosophy and how it's grown, because there was one piece in an article that you kindly sent me, or your organization kindly sent me, and it was to do with what you'd learned. And I thought to myself, so this is a sort of living, breathing organism. You're continually learning. Has your learning come to a halt now after 25 years? Or, for example, has 2025 taught you a few new things?
I would say, I mean, I'm still learning about different markets and different shares, but I'm not learning about the process anymore because I've been doing the same thing for 25 years. So I'd be a very slow learner if I didn't work it out by now. So I have learned... I'm not learning anymore about the process, but I would say one thing is as you get older and you do it more and more, I think you get more confident because you've seen that situation play out a lot of times. So I feel, to be honest, I feel that that I'm doing the best job I've ever done with the fund, but it's not because I'm learning more. It's more because I've seen that situation play out now. You know, 10 years ago, I saw the situation play out once and 15 years ago twice, and now it's been four times, and every time it happens you're a little bit more confident, and so you place bigger bets on the situation. And so I think that's the part that you learn, is that you get more confident in saying, before, like, a share would interest me, I'd buy 2% 20 years ago, now I'd buy 8% in it because I've seen it. So I think that's the part.
So you think history is going to repeat itself? You're confident it's going to repeat itself, and you're confident again that South Africa is not going to fall on its head. And these are stocks that you so eloquently told me were at their lowest in so many different ways. They are not going to stay that low for that much longer.
No, I think, look, I don't know for 100% certainty that South Africa is not going to fall on its head, but I would say the probability it's not. But you know, the thing about investing in the stock market is it's really just a game of odds. You know, it's the shares are discounting a very high probability of a problem as described in the Wall Street Journal and South Africa's GDP growing at 1% in perpetuity or even 0%. And, you know, my view on everything is it's 50-50 because, you know, I've been around long enough to know you can't really tell the future. But in this case, I would think it's 70-30 that South Africa won't run into that big problem as described in the Wall Street Journal, and that South Africa will, in a year's time, will be sitting here and the growth will be 2 or 3% in GDP. That's what I think, but I could probably ascribe a 70% probability. But the shares, I think, ascribe a 10% probability. So all buying South African shares is really just playing the odds between, let's call it 50-50 if you have no view, or 70-30 on my view, and the market saying it's 10-90 the other way. And the interesting thing about South African shares, I think we spoke 18 months ago prior to the election, and that was the same story. And, you know, we bought a lot of South African Inc. shares. Basically, the whole fund was South African Inc. in April before the election, April last year. South African shares went up 50% in dollar terms in the next 6 months. And to be honest, I sold most of them because I made so much money in 6 months. And then they came down pretty much all the way down a month ago, they got almost to the same level as they were prior to the election on these two concerns that we've discussed about. So all I've done in the last 3 or 4 months is buy back into South African shares. And because once again, they're basically nearly as cheap as they were prior to the election, which doesn't make sense to me. And if you actually wind back a bit, in December, I went back and looked in December, and I said, what was the cost of 10-year money? I think the 10-year bond was 10 or 11%.
Got to 11, it's yeah.
Got to 11. It's now 9 at 9.6. The rand was 18.50, 19. It's now 17.50. And we've also had the news that South Africa's, we're now running a current account surplus, and our terms of trade are at an all-time high. So if you would have said to me in December, gold price and the platinum price are going to go up more than 30% in rand, that the cost of money is going to fall from 11 to 9.5, and that the rand is going to strengthen from 18.50 to 17.50, and South African shares were trading on the, I would say, I think anyone would have said South African shares would be up 20% in rands this year if that happened, because you know that's what drives drives the returns. And yet South African shares, most of them, are down 20% because of those two concerns we discussed. So the macroeconomic drivers for South Africa are moving in the right direction. We run a current account surplus, and we run a fiscal surplus before interest. So, you know, what we like to do is add those two deficits or surplus together. So we run a maybe 2 or 3% current account surplus and maybe a 4% deficit, 5% deficit. So you add the twin deficits together, you get like minus 2 for South Africa. You know, that number in the US is more like minus 13. So from a macro point of view, you know, our terms of trade are improving. Our fiscal situation is improving. Our current accounts are improving. The cost of money is coming down. Interest rates are being cut. The GNU is just hanging in there. It's doing okay. It's not brilliant, but it's, you know, all those things are moving in the right direction. I think the only real negative is the politics, you know, what we discussed about the Wall Street Journal. And then obviously what happens on the ground in South Africa, which is, you know, the lack of municipality delivery, the lack of water.
Lack of jobs.
Those things, the lack of jobs. Those things are still there, and those are impediments. But, you know, but the bigger picture, the way the country's been run from a macro point of view, not from a micro point of view, is actually very positive. And I can build a whole portfolio of between 5 and 10% of it in yield shares. So, yeah. It's a combination of, yeah. So that's the interesting thing. So all I've done is I've rotated back into South Africa shares, although this time around I happen to have bought different types of South African shares than prior to the election, just because of price movements.
Just because you can. And essentially what you just did was you bought, they went shooting up because of the government of national unity plus a couple of other factors. They fell on their head because of government of national unity and its infighting. And now you're buying them back again, or have been buying them back again. It's very, very interesting. So as I thought, you've been having an enjoyable time, certainly in South Africa. But has it been a fertile field of opportunities elsewhere as well, apart from the United States?
So, yeah, offshore actually, this year we've done better offshore than South Africa. And interestingly, our offshore components are 30% in dollars this year, which is really good. And the reason for that is, firstly, it's got 20% in gold shares. And I've got no gold shares in South Africa because South African gold shares have been the best gold shares in the world by so far, for whatever reason. So I've sold out of them mainly because they just did too well. But the international gold shares, and I've got 3 gold shares internationally, Barrick, Newmont, and Fresnillo, which is gold and silver. You know, they have literally, you know, in the last, off the top of my head, the last 3 or 4 years, South African gold shares are up 4 times in dollars, and these shares are up 1 times. So this gap is enormous. So the gold, I like to get it rather in the international, and they're starting to do really well internationally. And then I've got money in emerging markets in China, and China's quietly done very well. You know, the last year, China's actually outperformed America by a massive amount in constant currency, remembering the dollar's been weak. And the Chinese market a year ago was considered uninvestable. Well, even though everyone's so happy the US market's back at all-time high, the Chinese market's killed it in the last year. And other emerging markets have also done really well. I mean, even South Africa's up, I think the number's something like 25 in rand, 35 in dollars in the last year, which is way ahead of the US market. So offshore, we've got our money in emerging markets, we've got it in China, we've got it in gold, and then we've got a lot of special situations shares that are across the world that are really, really cheap. And every now and then, one of them gets bought out. And so, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity in the rest of the world. And I would just say, if you just forget about where the U.S. market is, if you just group a line of the MSCI Emerging Market Index, just in absolute terms, not relative, you know, it's been gradually moving up for years now, and it's actually a very, very good chart. It's sort of gradually breaking out. It trades on like 12 times earnings. There's nothing wrong with emerging markets. You don't have to worry. So you can go and play, hope that the Magnificent Seven keep going up, or you can just put your money in 12 PE emerging markets and go to the beach.
Okay. You can also go to the beach if you've been adjusting gold. Now, a few people, I will admit, have probably sort of drifted off a little bit and started fiddling with the TV remote control. And then they suddenly heard gold and they say, so what was that? What did the nice gentleman say? And suddenly their interest is piqued. And that's just the nature of gold. You're still bullish, aren't you?
Yes. So I think, you know, people think the gold price has gone up because of Russia and geopolitics. It's got nothing to do with that. The real story with gold is we've got to the end of the road of the debt bubble in the developed world. So we're talking about Japan, Europe, and the US. And we have got to the situation where all those three regions are completely bankrupt. And there's no, nice. There's no debate. There is no debate about that. You know, if you look at Greece, they saved their way back to prosperity in the last 10 years. Those three regions, the debt to GDP and the deficits are so big that there is no saving your way back from here. There is only one way out for those three regions, and that is to inflate away the debt. And, you know, what you're seeing in America with Trump being so vocal about rates coming down and interfering with the Fed is exactly because of that, because he knows that's the plan, and they have to reduce interest rates back to negative in real terms, and all those three regions have to run negative real interest rates like QE was 10 years ago. They have to run it for the next 10 or 15 years, and if you're going to have negative real rates, you're going to have those three currencies depreciating and a real asset like gold keeping going up. So the gold price is in a multi-decade bull market because in the inflating way of debt, you cannot hold government bonds and you cannot hold cash because you're going to get negative real returns on cash. And government bonds, to be honest, they can't really pay you back. So all they can do is raise inflation and keep interest rates low and basically steal from the savers of the world to pay the debtors of the world, which are the governments. Mm-hmm. And that's the case for gold. So I mean, it's incredible because, you know, they raised rates in the U.S. so much and interest rates went to positive 2% in the U.S. in the last couple of years. And the gold price just went up because you can't hold the dollar anymore. And aside from the economic thing, what's happening to the dollar, obviously there's the other thing about all the policies of the U.S. at the moment being pretty bad for the dollar. That's another aspect to the whole thing. So I think the gold price will continue to go higher, and the gold shares have only just started, especially internationally, just in the last 3 or 6 months, have started to recognize the story. So the average fund manager in the world has not participated in gold. In South Africa, they have, but in the rest of the world, you know, if you look at Barrick or Newmont, the shares have hardly moved. But they're starting to take notice.
It's very interesting because people listening to this will say, people always say gold never doesn't pay a dividend, it doesn't yield anything. You've just completely countered that argument. And another person will say, well, then why do I need to buy South African banks with their high dividend yield and the state of the South African bond market when I can buy gold, which sounds so much more exciting, John?
Well, it is more exciting, but it is nice to start every year. You know, gold doesn't pay a dividend. Mm. So you buy Nedbank and Absa, you start the year 9% ahead of the gold price, which is a good start.
Yes.
And so that's the first thing. The second thing is, if the gold price keeps going up, you know, the platinum price will also keep going up because they are linked somewhat. And that's good for South Africa and good for the economy. And gold and platinum is still pretty important to South Africa. The economy will improve and you're in a 9% yield. So in a funny way, you can buy those two banks and you're getting a fantastic dividend yield and you're getting the shares at the same level. I think Nedbank's the same level as 25 years ago in rands. You're getting really cheap shares and you have actually got some exposure to gold. So you should have both, would be my.
Yes, or you should have one fund, and I won't mention which one it is. Now, to end off, I need you to do something for me. I need you to pick a share that's, it could be a favourite of yours because of a previous history with it, or you've just bought it. I just want a share that sort of characterises and epitomises the value fund. Just give me one, please, and why.
So probably the best one is the one that I just finished buying yesterday. It's always nice to talk about a share that you just finished buying yesterday,
mm-hmm.
which is Woolworths, which is interesting, a share that I haven't held for probably 20 years, and it's done incredibly badly, so it ticks the box. I mean, it was 110 rand 6 years ago. It's 50 rand today. At 50 rand today, you know, it fits the mold of it's a South Africa share. They've given up on all that David Jones nonsense, so it's back to South Africa only. At 50 rand, if you place the food business on the same valuation as ShopRite, which I think is justified because Woolworths Food is, in my view, the best business in South Africa.
Yeah.
You get to 50 rand a share. So you basically get all the clothing and homeware for free, and you get Country Road for free. And Country Road is losing money. People will say it's not worth anything. Obviously, that's not true. It's still worth something. It's a great brand, and they may sell it, and they may not, but it's worth something. So basically, I think you're getting those two businesses for free. If I value the clothing business at the same as the average valuation of other clothing businesses in South Africa and put Country Road at a low valuation that they may sell it at, you get over 70 rand and the share's 50. And it's a, you know, it's a quality business still. So, and the last thing is the easiest thing is it just came out of the index yesterday, the MSCI World Index. And as an aside, all these nice fundamental stories I tell you, if you just bought the shares that came out of the MSCI index every 3 or 6 months, you could actually make a living because that is always the biggest buy signal. And in the last few years, I remember Tiger Brands coming out of the index at 130 rand, today over 300. Impala Platinum coming out of the index at 35, today 160. Last year, earlier this year, Exxaro came out at 140, it's now 200. And Woolworths came out yesterday at 50 rand. So
that's such an interesting story. And the reason is, of course, is because people have to get out of the stock because it's no longer in the index and they're an index tracker.
Correct. And do you know how much the index held of, because it's the MSCI World Index, it's big, they held over 8% of Woolworths. So they had to sell 8% of the company, which they traded yesterday.
John, as always, I asked you about learning new things, and I've just learned something from you, as I always do. John, thank you very much for your time, and we'll speak again, not in 18 months' time, but in around about 6 months, I hope. John Bickard is Portfolio Manager, Value Fund at 91. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.